Hello and welcome to our program, Money Matters, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Deb Parsons, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from various news sources here on OWL Radio. Starting out today is an article from Bloomberg Businessweek. After so many false dawns, the market is convinced the Fed will finally cut. Will bond buyers finally get their wish? Few saw the bonds market about-face coming. Month after month, prices did little but fall as the economy remained surprisingly resistant to the Federal Reserve's rate hike onslaught. By late October, 10-year Treasury yields had pushed above 5% for the first time since 2007, and U.S. government debt was on pace for its third straight annual loss. Analysts at Bank of America Corp. said it was shaping up to be the worst rout in the nation's history. Then investors finally got the signals they'd been waiting for. On November 1st, the Fed held interest rates steady for the second meeting in a row, while Chair Jerome Powell telegraphed he may finally be done with the most aggressive round of monetary policy tightening in four decades. This was followed by a steady flow of data showing that the economy is cooling and inflation is coming down at a faster than expected pace. The result was a torrid rally that drove high-quality bonds in November to the biggest monthly return since the mid-1980s, enough to leave them with a small gain for the year. On cue, stocks surged as well amid speculation that the Fed will pivot to cutting interest rates next year. The European Central Bank is expected to start easing policy too. There have been several false dawns in financial markets over the past 2 years, when investors accustomed to the long era of easy money predicted the Fed was poised to change course, only to be caught flat-footed when it didn't. Deutsche Bank AG has counted six of them, but across Wall Street, there's growing confidence that this latest one is the real thing. The market now sees a visible path for rate cuts in 2024, and stock and bond prices are beginning to reflect that potential for easier monetary policy, says Anthony Slagabeni, the chief market strategist at Ameriprise Financial. There's some solid support for the shift in sentiment. The U.S. Department of Commerce's Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, the Fed's favorite inflation gauge, slowed in October to an annual pace of 3% from a peak of 7.1% last year and within spitting distance of the central bank's 2% target. Consumer spending is showing signs of fatigue, and the once blistering pace of job and wage growth has cooled. There's a lot of disinflation in the pipeline. Neil Detta, director of economic research at Renaissance Macro Research LLC, told Bloomberg Television, "The data's lining up, and we're on a glide path now to a rate cut, probably by March." Markets are shifting toward that view, spurred by some formerly hawkish Fed officials who indicated that the central bank has raised rates far enough. Futures traders have started to price in strong odds that the Fed will begin cutting by March. On the back of that prediction, the S&P 500 rose almost 9% in November. The NASDAQ 100 index, full of rate-sensitive growth stocks, gained even more. Still, there remains the risk that markets have gotten ahead of themselves again. On December 1st, Powell pushed back on the rate cut chatter, saying it was premature to speculate about when the Fed will start to ease, signaling he's in no rush to declare victory over inflation. Where Treasury yields are headed, of course, ultimately depends on the trajectory of the economy. And their path is crucial, because they help set the cost of all types of borrowing, including mortgages and loans to teetering companies. Right now, investors are betting that yields have already peaked, with the 10-year Treasury rate pulling back towards 4%. Even if a strong round of data causes them to pair the recent drop. Both scenarios being debated on Wall Street, soft landing with slower growth and inflation, or a hard landing into a recession, are positive for bonds because either would lead to rate cuts. Already this month, markets appear to be anticipating the more benign scenario, with futures pricing that the Fed would cut its key policy rate to around 4% by the end of 2024. It's currently in a range of 5.25% to 5.5%. Yet that would only push the rate back to where it was in late 2022. Given the slowdown of inflation, That would be more the Fed taking its foot off the brake than tapping the accelerator. Some prominent investors doubt that's how it will pay out. Hedge fund manager Bill Ackman, who closed out his short bet against bonds right when the market was bottoming out, says the economy will be at risk of buckling if the Fed doesn't start cutting rates soon. That nagging fear has damped some of the euphoria in the equity market. Michael Kantrowitz, the chief investment strategist at Piper Sandler, says the full weight of the Fed's hikes are only now starting to be felt. As a consequence, he cautioned against piling into shares of banks, car makers, and others that will benefit from a soft landing. "We believe that it's way too soon to poster the walls with mission accomplished signs," he wrote in a note to clients. For bondholders, losses would stop piling up even if rates held steady only from here. Thanks to the November rally, a gauge of investment-grade bonds, including treasuries and corporate debt, by the start of November had eked out a 2.5% gain this year. That's negligible, but it's a welcome relief after a 13% loss in 2022. Priya Misra, a portfolio manager at JP Morgan Chase & Company, says right now the direction of the stock market is the hardest to predict. "A soft landing and risk assets are okay," she says. "Hard landing is a big problem for risk assets." For fixed income securities, she's much more confident. "The Fed will cut at some point. We can debate timing and amount." Traders remain convinced that the pain is finally ending in the bond market. This may mean Powell is poised to pull off a soft landing. Or it could mean the pain for the economy is only just getting started. From MarketWatch, this article is titled, "President Biden Has Created a Strike Force to Combat High Prices. Experts Wonder Whether It Will Work." After President Biden on Tuesday announced a strike force intended to combat unfair and illegal price hikes amid a two-year inflation spell, experts wondered, how would it actually work, and would it actually work? They also had other questions. How much funding would it have? How much different from the work these agencies already do? According to a White House fact sheet on that announcement, the strike force would strengthen interagency efforts to root out and stop illegal corporate behavior that unfairly or fraudulently raises prices on consumers. An administration official said those interagency efforts included increasing information sharing and encouraging greater engagement with state and local governments. Tuesday's statement added that the Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission, the two agencies tasked with overseeing the segment, along with others, would focus on key sectors where corporations may be violating the law and keeping prices high, including prescription drugs and healthcare, food and grocery, housing, financial services, and more. And according to a readout on Wednesday, the strike force would work together to share information and data, explore ways to cooperate with state and local governments and other third-party actors, identify new resources in partnership with other federal agencies, and produce a biannual report highlighting the strike force's priority areas. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, in a statement, called the strike force an attempt to return to government price controls that would damage the economy. A Wall Street Journal editorial headline read, "The Biden strike force is coming for you." But others saw the Biden administration's announcement as something a little more along the lines of a symbolic gesture. It wanted a new bold, dare I say, Trump-like term to catch the public's attention. Stephen Calkins, a law professor at Wayne State University and general counsel of the FTC from 1995 to 1997, told MarketWatch, "This is an exercise in marketing, not competition promotion. And again, I say that as someone who thinks the White House deserves praise for the competition council it formed a while ago," he continued. The announcement came ahead of Biden's State of the Union address on Thursday, as polling shows doubts among voters over his ability to handle an economy marked by prices that are still far higher than before the pandemic. The Justice Department did not respond to a request for comment. The FTC referred back to the White House and Biden's announcement on Tuesday. The Biden administration has tried to take a tougher stance on corporate price hikes and consolidation. Also Tuesday, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau finalized a rule to cut the average credit card late fees to $8 from $32. And the FTC, Justice Department, and the Department of Health and Human Services launched an inquiry seeking more insight on how private equity and corporate control in the healthcare sector affects profits and patients. Over nearly 4 years, trillions of dollars in pandemic aid, supply chain convulsions, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine initially drove costs for labor, shipping, and food higher, expenses companies passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices. But profit margins for corporate America surged overall, and economists believe companies, seeking to test consumer demand and guard profits, took advantage of the supply upheaval to keep prices higher. Mark Whitener, a Georgetown University professor who worked as deputy director for the FTC's Bureau of Competition during the first Bush administration and the Clinton administration, said the new strike force and any accompanying chest thumping from the president could still be somewhat effective, albeit not through direct legal means. That wouldn't surprise me if some industries took note of the fact that they're under the microscope and acted a little differently, he said. But that won't be because of any clear law enforcement, at least not in the FTC and DOJ world that I am familiar with, he added. Regulating pricing is not their responsibility and not their job. The Justice Department and the FTC enforce laws surrounding competition and deceptive practices, and their actions can indirectly keep a lid on what businesses overall charge their customers. The Justice Department can bring criminal cases, while the FTC can't. Both use lawsuits to block mergers, which give the combined business more command over the market and more flexibility to hike prices. The DOJ often takes on cases related to price fixing, in which companies agree on what they'll charge consumers, usually with the effect of raising prices, while the FTC also works to take on deceptive practices. Christine Bartholomew, a law professor at the University of Buffalo, said price hikes can become a potential legal issue, particularly for larger companies in industries dominated by only a few players, when prices no longer respond to market forces. That can happen via schemes to fix prices or keep rivals from accessing a type of item or raw material, thereby allowing the people doing the manipulating to raise prices with lower risk of a competitive response. She said the strike force's success would come down to judges and money. It's really going to depend on if this is funded and how the judicial branch decides to respond to litigation that's brought by this task force, she said. We can investigate, we can look at things, we can file suit, she continued. But if you can't actually prosecute or you can't actually reach resolutions on some of the types of anti-competitive conduct, that investigatory time isn't really going to get you any change. Consumer prices overall ticked 0.3% higher month over month in January, according to government data. Over the past 12 months, prices were still up 3.1%. Food prices were up 2.6% over that time, while energy costs were down 4.6%. From company to company, the figures are mixed. During their most recent quarters, Conagra Brands Incorporated, CAG, the maker of Healthy Choice and Slim Jims, charged a bit less during the most recent quarter, while meat producer Tyson Foods Incorporated, TSN, charged a bit more overall, led by a sharp increase in beef prices. Among big producers of consumer goods, Procter & Gamble Corporation, PG, pushed its prices 4% higher in its most recently reported quarter. And while price increases may be easing, they're still hurting shoppers overall. While we're happy to see inflation rates moderating this year, if you compare industry pricing in key categories back to 2020, food at home pricing for families has increased 25% overall, and in some areas, up to 30%. Target Corporation Chief Executive Brian Cornell said on the retailer's earnings call in November. And if you're a parent raising a baby, you're facing increases of more than 30% on baby food and formula too. And that's in addition to persistent increases in a variety of other categories, he added. An analysis last year by Accountable US, a a liberal advocacy group, found that S&P 500 companies, broadly, were able to push their margins higher after the end of 2022, while still spending $922.7 billion on buybacks and $564.6 billion on dividends, both records. That analysis found that companies like Huggies and Kleenex maker Kimberly-Clark Corporation, KMB, PepsiCo, PEP, and General Mills Incorporated, GIS, openly touted the financial benefits of raising their prices. The group said it was very encouraged by the strike force, and it questioned whether big pharma, grocery, oil, and other companies really needed to raise prices so much. Any given week, some corporate CEO boasts of huge profit increases or investor payouts after swearing they had no choice but to inflate prices for everyday consumers. Liz Zelnick, the director of Accountable's Economic Security and Corporate Power Program, said via email, "No one is buying it." From MarketWatch, mortgage rates edge down. Homebuyers are seizing the moment while it lasts. The 30-year fixed mortgage rose an average 6.88% as of March 7th, according to data released by Freddie Mac, FMCC, on Thursday. It's down 6 basis points from the previous week. 1 basis point is equal to 1/100 of a percentage point. A year ago, the 30-year was averaging at 6.73%. The average rate on the 15-year mortgage was 6.22%, down from 6.26% last week. The 15-year was at 5.95% a year ago. Freddie Mac's weekly report on mortgage rates is based on thousands of applications received from lenders across the country that are submitted to Freddie Mac when a borrower applies for a mortgage. Separate data by Mortgage News Daily said that the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was averaging at 6.97% as of Thursday afternoon. The Mortgage Bankers Association survey noted that the 30-year was at 7.02% as of March 1st. What Freddie Mac said: evidence that purchase demand remains sensitive to interest rate changes was on display this week, as applications rose for the first time in 6 weeks in response to lower rates, Sam Cater, chief economist at Freddie Mac, said in a statement. What are they saying? While mortgage rates are expected to fall further in 2024, short-term movements in mortgage rates will be influenced by Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell's remarks during the semi-annual monetary report to Congress on Thursday and the January jobs report, which will be released Friday. Lisa Sturtevant, chief economist at Bright MLS, said in a statement, "A small decline in mortgage rates last week led to a nearly 10% jump in mortgage applications, with refinance and purchase activity both posting solid gains." Bob Brogsmit, president and CEO of the Mortgage Bankers Association, said in a statement. The MBA releases a separate report on application data based on a survey of lenders. From Investopedia, what is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, DJIA, all-time high? The Dow Jones Industrial Average, also known as the Dow or DJIA, tracks 30 large, well-known companies that trade on the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ. The Dow's all-time high at market close stands at 39,131.53, reached on February 23, 2024. The index's highest price at any time was on the same day, 39,282.28. In the lead-up to these highs, the Dow had been on a tear, fueled by growing optimism about interest rate cuts and economic recovery. This was the lead-up to a change in the Dow, with Amazon Incorporated, AMZN, replacing Walgreens, WBA, which had only been in the index since 2018 and was the DJIA's worst performer in 2023. Here are some other critical moments in the crucial stock market benchmark. A brief history of the Dow. Journalist Charles Dow and his business partner, Edward Jones, established the Dow Jones Industrial Average in 1896 with 12 companies in the industrial sector. The number of companies included in the index increased to 20 in 1916 and then to the current number, 30, in 1928. Since its inception, the Dow has remained among the most frequently discussed and commonly tracked equities indexes. Notable milestones for the Dow. The following are some milestones achieved by the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow's points, as inflation adjusted to February 23, 2024, provide for a relative comparing to its record high. March 15, 1933. The largest one-day percentage gain occurred during the market turmoil of the 1930s, when the Dow increased 15.34%, up 8.26 points to close at 62.10, about 1,520 points inflation adjusted. October 19, 1987. The day of the Dow's largest one-day percentage drop came to be known as Black Monday, as the average fell 22.6%. The exact causes of the crash remain a mystery, although program trading may have played a role. January 25, 2017. The Dow closed above 20,000 points for the first time. March 16, 2020. The Dow crashed amid the COVID-19 pandemic, falling close to 3,000 points in a single day after several drastic changes up and down. November 16, 2020. The Dow returned to its pre-pandemic high, jumping to 29,950.44. November 24, 2020. The Dow exceeded 30,000 points for the first time, closing at 30,046.24. February 23, 2024. The Dow reached its all-time high of 39,282.28. Dow all-time highs. The Dow has consistently hit new highs during the 2010s. The longest bull market in history lasted about 11 years, starting in March 2009 and ending in February 2020. Many records were set in 2019, thanks in part to trade talks with China that boosted firms in the index. The Dow had 22 record closes in 2019. The Dow finally broke the 30,000 mark the following year. Uncertainty had been hanging over the markets because of the unprecedented refusal of then-President Donald Trump to concede the election to President-elect Biden. When Trump began the transition process late on November 23, 2020, stocks came roaring back. The index also had a banner year in 2021. The Dow climbed to 31,522.75 points on February 16, 2021. It hit an all-time high of 34,200.67 points on April 16, 2021. In the autumn, it began to consistently close above 35,000 points, and by the last week in December 2021, it surpassed 36,000 points. Another big rally started at the end of October 2023. Through much of 2022 and 2023, investors were cautious and bearish about equity markets as inflation rocketed. Then, in the last few months of 2023, investors began piling back in hopes that interest rates would soon be cut and a nasty recession averted. By the end of 2023, the previous high, registered in January 2022, had been surpassed, and the 37,000 mark had been breached. The Dow then climbed above 38,000 in January 2024. Dow all-time lows and plunges. While the recent decade has shown strong economic growth, leading to plenty of record highs for the Dow, there have been significant plunges as well, both over longer periods and in dramatic single-day or single-moment drops. Perhaps the most infamous trial was during the Great Depression, in which the Dow lost about 90% of its value over 3 years. It hit a low of 41.22 in 1932, about 908 points, inflation adjusted. 22.61%, the largest single-day drop, percentage-wise, that the Dow has had occurred when the market crashed on October 19, 1987, Black Monday. However, in points, the Dow's worst day was March 16, 2020, when it fell 2,997.1 points in reaction to the pandemic-era adoption of lockdowns throughout the U.S. and the Federal Reserve slashing interest rates to near zero. Since the Great Depression, 2007 to 2008 has been the most dramatic period for the DJIA. The market fell more than 50% in just a year and a half because of subprime mortgage and credit crisis that kicked off the Great Recession. Previously, the Dow had fallen from 11,723 in January 2000 to 9,389 in March 2001, dropping 20%, from 20,520 to 16,434 points, inflation adjusted. The bout of inflation that followed the COVID-19 pandemic led to another sharp sell-off in 2022. Between January 7, 2022 and September 30, 2022, the Dow declined from 36,231.66 to 28,725.51. The recession from 1973 to 1975 also led to a fall-off for the Dow, which dropped 45% from its 1,051 peak in 1973 to just under 600 in 1974, about 7,486 and 3,871 points, respectively, inflation-adjusted. The Dow also lost 26.5% during the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. How are companies in the Dow Jones Industrial Average selected? The Dow tracks 30 large publicly owned blue-chip companies trading on the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. The selection is not based on strict quantitative data, but rather on the decisions of the editors of the Wall Street Journal. Companies are chosen based on their reputation, growth, and relevance to the economy, with the aim of reflecting the overall health and trends of the industrial section of the United States economy. How often does the Dow Jones Industrial Average change? When a company undergoes significant changes, such as a merger, acquisition, or substantial shifts in its business model, or when there's a need to better represent the current state of the economic sectors, adjustments are made. These changes are not done often to ensure the index's stability and continuity. What are the drawbacks of the Dow Jones Industrial Average? Since the Dow tracks just 30 large-cap U.S. companies, some critics argue that it is too narrow to represent the state of the overall U.S. economy. Given its large-cap focus, the roster of companies included in the Dow fails to include companies of other sizes. Most market observers think the S&P 500 is a much better representation for the economy, as it includes 500 companies and draws more widely from different sectors. You have been listening to Money Matters on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Deb Parsons saying goodbye from Owl Radio.